Good afternoon and welcome to All Things Equine with a Twist on Radio Winchcombe, 107.1 FM and live online. I'm Charlie Hollis. Now, today is in fact the first of a two-part mini-series, with a second part to be broadcast next month, 7th of March, at 2 in the afternoon. Philippe Carle is a French riding instructor in the classical mode, and he works in France, Germany, the UK and the USA. He's passionate about what he does, and his particular field of expertise is within the dressage world. He also feels very strongly that much of what is being done in dressage, both in terms of training and riding, is not really to the benefit of the horses, although it's to the benefit of the riders. Now, in fact, he's really creating great waves, and indeed there is a lot of controversy in the dressage world at the moment. A lot of very passionate feelings are aroused, and Philippe Carle himself certainly does arouse some very passionate feelings in many people. Now, obviously, all horse owners will say and will genuinely mean that they love their horses. They don't deliberately set out to do things which are harmful to them. Nevertheless, Philippe does believe very strongly that a lot of what is done is in fact quite harmful to the horse, and he's not afraid to stand up and say so, but also to offer alternative ways of riding and training that he believes are much, much more to the benefit of the horse. Some of the clinics that he runs in this country are done at Holistic Equitation in Northamptonshire, and in December of last year, I was very fortunate to attend one of those clinics for a whole day, at which I was able to interview Philippe himself and some of his students. It was a very enlightening day, and the interviews that I obtained are going to be going out today, and as I say, also next month on the 7th of March. The first person we're going to hear is actually one of his students, a lady called Kat Layfield. In talking to her, you're going to get a little bit of a picture, a background of why it is that somebody might come to work with Philippe, and then following that, we're going to actually hear from the master himself. And later in the show, we'll hear from some of his other students and again from Philippe himself. So first of all, let's hear what Kat Layfield has to say. So Kat Layfield, welcome to Radio Winchcombe, and I'm delighted to have you contribute to the show. We're at Philippe Carle's clinic here in Northamptonshire. Tell me how you came to find him or why you came to find him.
I was looking for a classical trainer that would train horses without force, that had a system that was concise and had clarity and a system the horses could understand, both physically and mentally, and was lucky enough to find Philippe was running a course in the UK in 2011.
And I take it that probably you've been a horse rider most of your life, since a little girl?
Yes, I've ridden since I was 3 years old. I've always been very compassionate with the horses, and from the age of about 17 or 18 realised when I started teaching horse riding that I wanted to find a better way of teaching it.
Was there any particular thing, because I mean a lot of people obviously have grown up with the system you have but haven't questioned it, was there anything particular that made you question the way you'd been taught?
I think I had a horse, one of my first horses, who was not a horse that could be bullied into work. She had some conformation challenges as well, and the traditional system did not work for her. So that definitely helped set me on the path to finding alternatives.
So how many actual clinics have you had with Philippe now?
Today was my first clinic riding with him. I've been an auditor spectating on the first course for the past 3 years and have ridden on some of Birgit's clinics. She's a licensed instructor and comes to the UK to teach at Holistic. So.
You certainly looked extremely relaxed out in the arena. Very impressive, I must say. What would you say has been in that time the biggest change that you've really felt in yourself and in your riding?
In the arena today here or generally?
Generally.
It makes you think about what you're doing, to become a thinking rider and trainer. And if you really are thinking about what you're doing, hopefully you'll do the right thing.
Thank you very much. It's lovely to talk to you, and I appreciate you contributing.
Thank you very much.
I think that hearing what Kat had to say does give a very clear idea of why someone might begin to question what they're doing and perhaps be drawn to work with Philippe Carle and his very, very different approach to riding instruction. Now we're going to hear a little piece of music, a piece of Johann Sebastian Bach, Fugue from the Violin Sonata in G Minor, played by Lana Trutosek.
Thank you.
Welcome back to All Things Equine with a Twist here on Radio Winchcombe, 107.1 FM and live online. I'm Charlie Hollis, and today's show features Philippe Carle, the French riding master, and we're now going to hear from Philippe himself. So, Philippe Carle, welcome to Radio Winchcombe. Thank you very much for being a guest.
Thank you. First of all, I want to apologize for my limited English talking, but I'll do my very best.
I'm sure you will, and I think the passion behind what you do will come through anyway. Tell us a little bit about yourself, how you came to riding, because you didn't start riding till you were around about 20.
As a child, I was already very attracted by horses, but in that time and in my family, there was no possibility to ride. So I started being 20 because I was starting medicine studies. I was also working a bit, making my own money. And with this money, I started to get lessons. And as I was not very passionate with the medicine studies, and it was, I had to decide for my whole life, and that's it. I decided to go for riding, and then I found 3 years of high school studies, fortunately, and afterward I started this profession.
And where was the first place in France that you actually were doing your riding?
As a professional? Mm. 50 kilometers southwest of Paris in Rambouillet. It was I was lucky enough to get as a first job the school in which I were a student 2 years before, and so I was in charge of teaching professionals during 2 years. So it was interesting, and I did that for 7 years.
And so that was around about 1968 that you started that?
It was in 68. In 68, I started this 3 year studies about breeding and preparing the teacher exam. This first job I started in 72. Because I had these studies plus the military service, so 72.
And so obviously when you were being trained, when you were learning to ride, I would assume that you were taught in a very traditional way, very different to the way you now believe and the way you now work.
Yes and no, because yes, I would be trained the most frequent conventional dressage way you can observe nowadays. I'm not sure I would ride a long time. But in that time, the teaching in France was, I would say, better. And, more connected to good traditions. And I was lucky to start with a bit exceptional person. Not a high-level rider, but somebody with a real culture and really good pedagogue. And he has been very interested by my dedication and understanding what I wanted, and he was an incredible support. And as he was a clever man with culture, he was interested in Oliveira, which was not fashionable at all in that time, on the contrary. You were not considered as somebody really interesting, especially being a professional. So I would say, thanks to him, I have been on good rails, in at least in my opinion, at the beginning.
And so the way that you now teach and the philosophy you have, was that really the seeds of that were at that time when you were quite young?
As I started being 20 and with some scientific education, I wanted to understand what I have to do. So I was questioning a lot the teachers. They sometimes didn't appreciate, mainly because they didn't get sufficient answers. I have been quite demanding from the very beginning. I wanted to understand and have explanations, and a reliable one. I had no prejudice. I was not thinking, okay, if you're interested in dressage, it has to be in a rectangular 2060 with letters around and a special black suit. I was reading books. I was very curious. I was interested in Oliveira because I could not understand why in that time. But there was clearly an artistic part in what he was doing, which was very emotional to me. And so I got my own way progressively like that, because not being conditioned, I was interested in dressage as I was interested in jumping. For me, there was no reason to be specialized one side or the other.
Tell us a little bit about Oliveira, because some of my listeners may not be familiar with him. Tell us about.
He has been important for me because, once again, he was... First of all, he was an alive example that it's possible to ride as a professional without being under competition influence. He was showing that it's possible to consider schooling horses as an art, and I was very sensitive to that. And because it was, for me, it was, it meant I could ride my whole life, not turning stupid. And there is something noble in that. And so he was an example on this, at least. I came in contact with students of him and finally with him. Surprisingly, maybe I was keeping some distance with his usual surrounding, with a chapel, I would say, because I'm quite independent, and there I was interested in him, but I didn't like that much this tribe which was around him. I wanted to keep independent, to go on competing jumping and things like that, or 3 days event, which was considered as a bit strange by the his direct circle. So I was attending some clinics of him as a listener. I was reading his books. I was watching videos and things like that. And finally, I was showing him horses three times. Once a bit before going to Saumur and in Saumur, but before that, never. And so I have to say that he has been important for me at the beginning, at least. And but I don't have a plate in the back.
And Saumur was the French Academy, is that correct?
Yes. I have been lucky that the écuyer en chef in that time, the General Durand, who has been international in jumping, and afterward the boss in the school, and is an exceptional personality of the French riding, because he has experience of high level competition. He's an incredibly clever man with incredible culture. And I was lucky enough that he were interested in an article I did, a quite long one, with photos of one of my horses who was advanced in schooling, but was also competing jumping. And I was giving technical explanations and historical explanations and being seriously critical with some aspects of the riding in Saumur. And the day I got a phone call, hello, yes, General Durand. I was thinking, wow, either it's somebody talking like him and doing a kidding, teasing me, or I'm in trouble. And he said that he was interested in what I was writing, that there were interesting things, and he would like that I come in the school for 3 days, conference and teaching the teachers. Good. I did. I was standing my opinions. And at the end, the gift has been that he said, would you be interested to integrate the school? And I did 6 months later on.
You're listening to Radio Winchcombe, All Things Equine with a Twist on 107.1 FM and live online. That's a good point at which to take a short break, and we're going to listen to an old Paul Simon track called You Can Call Me Al. Immediately after that, we'll hear from Kate Sandel and Mark Fuller. They were two of the students here on Philippe Carr's clinic in Northamptonshire, and we're going to get their take on how they've found working with him and the benefits they've gained from that. Then later on in the show, we'll be hearing from Philippe Carr himself again. So let's hear Paul Simon.
A man walks down the street. He says, why am I soft in the middle now? Why am I soft in the middle? The rest of my life is so hard. I need a photo opportunity. I want a shot at redemption. Don't want to end up a cartoon in a cartoon graveyard. Bone digger, bone digger, dogs in the moonlight. Far away, my well-lit door. Just a beer belly, beer belly. Get these mutts away from me, you know. I don't find this stuff amusing anymore. If you be my bodyguard, I can be your long-lost pal. I can call you Betty. Betty, when you call me, you can call me out. A man walks down the street, he says, why am I short of attention? Got a short little span of attention, and all my nights are so long. Where's my wife and family? What if I die here? Who'll be my role model now that my role model is gone, gone? He ducked back down the alley with some roly-poly little bat-faced girl. All along, along, there were incidents and accidents. There were hints and allegations. If you'll be my bodyguard, I can be your long-lost pal. I can call you Betty, and Betty, when you call me, you can call me out, call me out. Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed that golden oldie from Paul Simon here on Radio Winchcombe. I'm Charlie Hollis, this is All Things Equine with a Twist. And now we're going to hear from two of Philippe Carr's students who are partaking of the clinic in Northamptonshire. So I'm here at Philippe Carr's workshop, and I'm talking to two of the participants, two of his students this weekend. And it's Mark Fuller and Kate Sandell. And I'm going to get them to tell us a little bit about their history in terms of riding, because what Philippe Carr does in terms of his instruction is really very, very different to what many people in the mainstream of the equine world are doing. So, Kate, tell us a little bit about your history and your background.
Well, I suppose, like lots of girls, I started riding as a child and rode relatively traditionally for quite a long time, and then came across a horse I struggled with and ended up taking a horsemanship path and ended up teaching maybe a horsemanship approach to working with horses. But I felt like I wanted something more in terms of training horses and understanding how to train different horses, which the systems that I came across tended to be a one-size-fits-all. And so quite a few years ago, I started reading Philippe Carr's books and watching his DVDs and feeling very inspired by what I saw. So hence, I ended up applying to ride on the course.
And tell me, what exactly do you mean by a horsemanship approach? Because that's a word that's used quite a lot, and I guess some people will think of perhaps Monty Roberts and the like.
Yes, and I think it's quite a tricky one because there are lots of different schools that sit within horsemanship. I guess I'm thinking about working in ways that support the horse rather than use the horse, and maybe not aligning myself to any particular person. I suppose if I've studied most with anybody, it's been someone called Tom Widdicombe and a chap called Mark Rashid. But I think it's more just about trying to understand ways to help horses out with having to live in a human world, really.
Yeah, yeah. Now, Mark, you're obviously an experienced rider. Are you a competitive rider?
Yes, I am. I've been riding for 30 years, but competitively since I was 10 years old. Pony Club. And I was also in the King's Troop, Raw Horse Artillery. So I had a bit of a military background. Most of my incentive to ride has been competitive, less so over recent years. But I always enjoyed competing in all disciplines, really. Show jumping, eventing, dressage.
And obviously your background and your training as a horseman, I would imagine, was very different to the work Philippe Carr now does. Is that correct?
I'm obviously being in the military and then going to Talon, which was when I was there a long time ago, was relatively based on military principles. I changed tack a little bit after that because I was always interested in the idea of horsemanship and interacting with horses in a more relaxed and a way that fits them. So I did travel to America to Monty Roberts' place and spent some time training there to come back and sort of go more down that route. But as Kate was saying earlier, I think there's a bit of a gap that needs to be bridged between the idea of what is labelled now as horsemanship and interacting with horses in that respect, and the riding and training a horse to a good level without the stresses and strains of what a lot of modern sort of riding and competitive riding certainly shows. This is, to me, again, as Kate was saying, it's a good gap filler. It works on both sides of the idea that, you know, you can train a horse to a high level, do some lovely work, impressive work, but it shows the essence of the horse being in a relaxed state and in interacting with you because he's enjoying it as much as you are, rather than performing, rather like you see a lot now, horses carrying a lot of tension through their bodies and not necessarily working with the riders, more sort of because they have to. If you understand, it's because of the pressure.
What was there something in particular that made you want to start working with Philippe Carr, or was it just a gradual evolution of your experience?
No, I'll be honest, I'd never even heard of him a year ago. And I was rummaging around on YouTube one day. I was always very keen on a guy, an American rider called Buck Brannaman, who's a natural horseman, quite a famous natural horseman. But also what I liked about him was his, the way he rode, because there's a lot of good natural horsemen that not necessarily what I would deem as impressive riders. And I when I saw a clip of Philippe on YouTube, I could see parallels, even though his style was obviously more classical European, with him and Buck Brannaman. And I always liked the idea of going, wanting to go and train with Buck Brannaman, but being an Englishman and based in the UK, I couldn't see how that would help me to, because people aren't necessarily as interested in Western American style riding. But Philippe was kind of a classical version of Buck. And as soon as I saw a few moments of him riding, I just thought, I need to learn more about this. I want to ride like that. That's really cool. So I phoned Derek and asked if I could just have a lesson. But I didn't realise at the time that you have to apply. So I quickly applied, and here I am. And it's just obviously a fantastic opportunity, but probably the best thing I've ever chosen to do from a riding horsemanship perspective, to be honest.
That's quite something, and I think this is the second sort of clinic you're on with him now. Kate, what would you say, if there's any one thing, what's been perhaps the biggest change in you and your riding since working with Philippe?
I think he's begun to give me solutions to problems that I would only have had force as an answer to previously. And because he has so much focus on balance, which I think is extraordinarily important to horses, he gives you tools that you can help the horse out with, that actually make the horse feel better, rather than, as Mark was saying, obliging the horse to do it because it has no option. And so that's, for me, I feel like with fairly ordinary horses, you can produce extraordinary results, and you and the horse can have a feeling between each other that needs no other reward. So that, for me, is one of the greatest pleasures about working with Philippe, is you can have moments where the two of you are in perfect balance together, and it feels fabulous. And I'm pretty certain it feels fabulous to the horses too. So that's the big one for me.
It does look pretty fabulous from a spectator point of view. Now, of course, his school in France is called the École de Légèreté, which is the School of Lightness. Mark, would you say that really characterises perhaps changes for you, this concept of lightness?
Yeah, absolutely. Because you're not taking away what the horse was naturally born with. You're working with that, but also enhancing it. And this idea that the self-carriage and balance is the main priority when you start, is something very simple, but it's not in other forms of training talked about enough. And I think the other thing is that Philippe really... back, you know, drives home the idea that you really have to appreciate the sensitivity of the horse's mouth, and using your hands in an intelligent way to communicate and interact with the horse, to help the horse find a better way to carry you, help him do his job better, because it's not easy, and it's not as easy as people would imagine for the horse to carry you in perfect balance and relaxed. So it's a really, for me, having been riding for a long time, it's one of the first things he said to me. You have to appreciate much more what you're doing with your hands and how that affects the horse. So the lightness thing starts with that understanding. I think you have to really appreciate the horse's side of things, especially when you're using your hands and the bit in his mouth.
That brings up a very good point, the sensitivity for the horse's mouth, because, of course, there is a school of thought, I'm sure you're both familiar with, of bitless riding, and some of the bitless riders are certainly very, very passionate about that. Philippe does not do that. He uses a bit. So what's your take on that? What's your understanding of that now that you've worked with him, Kate?
Well, it's interesting because I had a little play with my own horse a few weeks ago on riding just off a caverson, so without a bit. And what I felt was that it was fine, but that the communication that you have between you and the horse, when the horse understands that the bit is a supportive tool that he can trust, that loss was immense to me. I suddenly realised that I felt like there was a break in communication between me and the horse, and he could do what I asked physically, but the connection between me and him was significantly reduced. And so for me, although I've got no issue with bitless riding at all, and I think it's probably a lot better than a lot of bitted riding where hands are used roughly, I think when you use the bit in a way that the horse understands and that you understand, there's a level of refinement and sophistication that you can't replicate. So I understand why Philippe thinks it's an integral part of a system based on lightness, because the effect you can have on the horse is mental and physical, and it's difficult to recreate that without a bit, I think.
Yeah, and I think one of the things, the key things Philippe talks constantly about, causing absolutely no pain at all. He says that good riding should be easy for the horse and difficult for the rider. Would you agree with that, Mark?
I totally agree with that, and I think this way of riding initially exposes the rider to their lack of balance and how reliant the rider can sometimes be on their hands for balance and security. And emotionally, I think some riders rely on a firm, sort of hard contact to the horse to feel like they are in control. And when you start riding in this way and you have to get rid of all of those reliances, you really start to become more aware of you have to find a way to balance yourself truly, not on the horse's mouth. And initially it can make you feel quite vulnerable, and I think it shows that, you know, you sometimes have to come back, even if you've been riding for a long time, come back to the basics of balance and security of your lower leg, so that you, in order to ride with a truly independent hand, and then you can move forward with a hand that is intelligent and a communicative use of the bit from your hands. So absolutely. I think going back to what Kate was saying about the lightness and bitless riding, I think the thing with a bit inside the horse's mouth is it's the only way you can affect the inside and the outside of a horse in a much more refined way. And so to achieve really high level of schooling, I think it's far more effective to use the bit. And obviously we've been riding and training and working with horses for thousands of years, and there's a reason why we've come to the conclusion that using a bit is the most effective and refined way of riding. But I think we've lost, generally, we've lost our way a little bit with that. The idea that the bit is there to communicate with the horse, not to restrain or constrain or control the horse. So this is, you know, the emphasis of what we're learning here is all about that.
Thank you. Well, it's a bitterly cold day. I know you both need some hot soup and get prepared for your riding later, which I'm looking forward to seeing. So Mark and Kate, thank you very much for being a guest on my show.
Thank you very much.
Thanks very much.
My final piece of music here on All Things Equine with a Twist is from the Queen of Soul, Aretha Franklin. A Change Is Going to Come. You're listening to Radio Winchcombe, 107.1 FM and live online. And in the final part of the show, following Aretha Franklin, I'm going to be talking to Philippe Carle himself again.
There's an old friend that I once heard say something that touched my heart, and it began this way. I was born by the river in a little tent, and just like the river, I've been running ever since. He said it's been a change is gonna come. Oh yeah.
That was Aretha Franklin, the Queen of Soul. A Change Is Gonna Come. You're listening to All Things Equine with a Twist here on Radio Winchcombe, 107.1 FM and live online. I'm Charlie Hollis. Today's show is featuring the French riding master Philippe Carl and some of his students. And in this last part of the show, I'm talking to Philippe again. And after you left there, what was your next sort of move? How did you move on from there?
I stayed 13 years, which is not a short thing, and doing many interesting things. Also aware of the limits, at least for me. And afterward, I was earning my money with giving clinics, because being in Saumur, I was already teaching a lot in US or in Italy or in other countries, in France naturally. And so I was mainly teaching like that, traveling a lot. And finally, I created this teacher training.
So that was when you set up your own academy?
Yes.
Mm-mm. And the name of the academy, and also translated it into English?
Translated into English, it's a School of Lightness. But the thing and that is that as a riding concept, it has a sense in French. Légèreté, I don't mean that it's the property of French people. It should. It should more than it is, in my opinion. But in the riding masters books, you find this concept and this idea a lot in the best French masters. And it's a kind of French tradition signature, if you really understand the whole thing. And that's the reason why I use it in French, even in Germany. So they were learning a French word. Because the translation, even when you say lightness or ease, I know what you mean. There is the same idea. But the full concept is something more precise and clear, and it makes sense in French. And I am often saying, in French, if you try to translate steeplechase, it's a disaster. I mean, it's impossible. So keep it in English. You are explained what it means, and that's it.
And I know that although a lot of people see what you're doing as being completely radical and very new, and for a lot of people it is, I believe that what you're also saying is that, in fact, the roots of what you do go away way back in French tradition.
Yes, absolutely. A frequent question is, are you a typical French rider? I have to answer yes and no. Yes, if you mean that I'm deeply connected to the best roots of the French tradition. I mean, Baucher, General Lotte, La Guérinière, and Bedon, Rab, others. But if you mean I'm a typical rider of nowadays, my answer is no. And what I realized is that with 40 years riding any kind of horses, especially the one others didn't want anymore, trying, but this came progressively with knowing more, not to use constraining instruments, trying to find clever solutions, getting scientific data in order to understand why this works, why this doesn't work. I progressively, with anatomy, biomechanic, balance, motion, whatever you want, ethology, I progressively came to quite clear ideas, working as an ID, but also working in practice, because this is the problem with writing. You prove by doing, but it doesn't mean you should not explain why it works. I came to quite clear ideas, and I could check that some of these ideas were already quite clear in some master's books. For instance, just to say it like that, and to be very, very, very practical. People like generally to oppose La Guérinière and Baucher, God and the Devil. Yes, there are things to criticize in both of them, and but things to keep. And it's more interesting to see what is common and good than to emphasize what is to criticize. For instance, they both said, own with their own way. When you school the horses, you have to use the hand, the seat, the legs, nothing else. So it means that La Guérinière, as Baucher, as General Lot, they said any special instrument to force this and that is just no way. This is something you can demonstrate with many data coming from different specialties. And it's also, I would say, a kind of elegance, because I don't like the idea, and I think when people have a certain level of thinking or ethic, I don't like the idea, for instance, that I have to tie the mouth of my horse to his belly to obtain a position. This is not nice. It's not only that it's not nice, it's dangerous, and it's a proof that you don't have real solution. I mean, imagine I'm a pedagogue specialized in young children. The parents are coming to me and they have a very overactive child, and the solution I find is to tie him on his chair with something in the on the mouth. I mean, they will not take me serious 1 minute, but in the conventional schooling of the horses, this is what many people do, and it's accepted as normal. In my opinion, it's not.
Yeah, I think that's true. Now, one of the things that you often say is that good riding should be easy for the horse and difficult for the rider.
I think true things are always difficult. And it seems we are just talking philosophy, but I mean, I could give 100 practical examples of that. It's true that it fits to the modern life. I mean, you want quick results, so you buy the solution. And each month there is a new bit, there is a new special rein to put the nose there. Each time it's expensive, it's forcing the horses. People buy that, it's a miracle for 3 days, or it's an accident. And then next. So it makes the business running, but in terms of riding culture, it's a disaster. No, the deep solutions consist in knowing a lot, learning, and the true solutions are easy for the horse because he has to understand something which is fitting to his nature. But this is for us, for human beings, it's very difficult. And I think it's the right way, because the other one is easy for the rider, but it's terrible for the horses. I mean, I don't need to explain.
There are certainly some very challenging ideas being put forward by Philippe Carl, but as you've heard from some of his students, they really do seem to work very effectively. And overall, it's an extremely committed and very professional group of riders under their master teacher. As I mentioned at the beginning of the show, this is the first of a two-part mini-series, and the second one will be transmitted on the 7th of March, Saturday the 7th of March at 2 in the afternoon, and will again feature further interview with Philippe Carl and some more of his students, and I do look forward to your company then. This show will be repeated this coming Wednesday at 12 noon and 6 in the evening, and then either on Wednesday or Thursday I will upload it to the Listen Again service, where it's permanently available as an archive show. So if you have friends who missed it and would like to listen then, they can either get the replay or go to the archive at any time in the future. And I hope you've enjoyed some very, very stimulating ideas. And I look forward to your company next month. And in the meantime, I hope it gets a little bit warmer. Enjoy yourselves until then.